From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
To hour two of our little show, OneRadioNetwork.com, to participate. 888-663-6386, email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. If you're interested in the world of money and geopolitics and how it all works with money and cool things like that, we have a great show every Wednesday, and he'll be here tomorrow, Andrew Goss. If you have questions about that or your own personal finances, can email me sometime today, Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. There's a cool documentary out. I think you can get a DVD on demand as of about a month ago, and called Injecting Aluminum. And one of the people that are the docs that are featured on this documentary is a man that's been looking at aluminum and toxicity for probably as long as anybody, is Dr. Christopher Exley. He's professor in bioinorganic chemistry at Birch Hall Central Keele University, Staffordshire, England, honorary professor at the University of Highland and Islands of Scotland. He's a biologist, PhD in exotoxicology of aluminum. Wow. And research career, 1984. Dr. Exley is here, and he's over. And Dr. Exley, good morning.
Yeah, hello there.
Or good afternoon, wherever you are.
Yeah, it's time. Yeah, we're good afternoon over here. That's
and
right.
You are in Stoke-on-Trent?
Stoke-on-Trent, yeah. Home of the potteries, home of the English china.
Oh, yes. Well, Dr. Exley, it's an honor to talk to you. You actually have a PhD in aluminum toxicology?
Yeah, that's right. That's how I ended up where I am now, by trying to understand why fish were dying in acid lakes. It's this phenomenon called acid rain, which, of course, has been a big problem in North America, too. And in the 80s, we didn't really know why the fish were dying, why the trees were dying. And we found out it was all down to aluminum, or aluminium, as we call it.
Yeah, you guys say it good over there. I like the way you say it over there. Where did all this aluminum come from in the 80s, this thing called acid rain?
Well, the aluminium, the aluminum, is what the Earth's crust is made of.
Yeah.
So the Earth's crust that we walk on is made of aluminium, silicon, and oxygen. And for 99.9% of life on Earth, most of that aluminium has been locked up in those rocks. But, man has changed that balance by burning fossil fuels like coal and gas and oil and things, putting sulfur dioxide into the air, which acidified the land and which released the aluminium from the rocks, which went into the rivers and the lakes and killed our fish and our trees. And then, at the same time, of course, man has learnt how to mine aluminium as bauxite, as aluminium oxide, and create aluminium metal and aluminium salts. And that's why I write about something called the aluminium age. When I went to school, we learned about the copper age, the bronze age, the iron age. Mm-hmm. Well, for the last 120 years or so, we've been living in the aluminium or aluminum age.
So aluminum is one of the aluminum, silicon, and oxygen. You say that's what the rocks are made out of?
That's exactly right. That's what the Earth's crust, the thing we walk on every day, that life supports life is made of essentially rock, which is aluminium, silicon, and oxygen.
But when we get out aluminum in our body, it's not too good. That doesn't make sense on any level why it would be there.
Well, this is largely, we would say, a man-made phenomenon.
Oh, in other words, it's okay if it's locked up in the rocks.
Exactly. Okay. Well, it's perfectly okay because we've had things living on the Earth for at least 2,000 million years, and the aluminium wasn't able to prevent that for that period of time. So it's only very, very recently that the activities of man have changed the balance, which is not unusual, of course. Man is good at doing things like that.
So did it start with Henry Ford and the gasoline engine and that's that kind of thing? That's where it started?
I think, the acid rain story started with the Industrial Revolution. You know, we learned how to use fossil fuels to create energy.
Right.
So we were burning our oils, our gases, our coal. Mm-hmm. All these things release sulfur dioxides into the atmosphere. And those sulfur dioxides had to come down somewhere, and they come down onto the earth, and they acidify the earth, and they cause the release of aluminium.
The main
way in which man has probably interfered with this cycle, though, is by learning to mine aluminium, to take aluminium ores where they are inert within the Earth's crust and turn them into aluminium metal and aluminium salts. And then, therefore, as I said, the aluminium age that we live in today. And, you know, you couldn't have modern life without aluminium. It's just not possible. So it has contributed hugely to modern life. Modern life is totally dependent upon aluminium. But there's always that question of whether it's safe or not. And I guess that's what the subject of injecting aluminium, injecting aluminium, the documentary you're
is about. And I suspect people can just Google that and probably download it and watch it. I suspect it's available, right? Yeah, it is.
I don't know so much about it. I think you can pay to view.
I think it's a pay to view. But so let's go back. So let's see. So there's a lot of aluminum used in our culture, Dr. Exley, other than Coca-Cola cans.
Oh, yeah. You can't. If I was asked to, you know, list the ways in which we are exposed to aluminum in our everyday life, then we'd be going on for hours.
Really?
It's literally everywhere and in everything. And that's the success of the metal. It's been an incredibly successful addition to our lives in the main, in terms of bringing, you know, modern life as we have it today. You know, you couldn't be flying across the Atlantic Ocean unless you had an aeroplane where the fuselage is made of aluminium. If it was made of iron, it wouldn't fly.
The idea of taking the aluminum out and making a metal with it, is that harmful to humans and the environment and then humans?
Well, it's what we do with it, of course.
Uh-huh.
We're talking about the fact that you've suddenly got something which we then learn has so many different properties and therefore so many different possible functions. And the more we use it, the more functions we find. You know, the story of the use of aluminium as an adjuvant in vaccines goes back about 100 years.
100 years, wow.
And there was, and again, it was a perfect example of finding a use for an aluminium salt, because the people who were investigating the immune response were looking for a way of boosting the immune response. So to combine an antigen, whatever it is you're being vaccinated against, combine it with something to make the response stronger. And if you believe the story, they looked on their shelf and they thought, well, which chemical shall we use? And they started with the one at the beginning of the alphabet, and they picked up a jar of something called alum, which would have been aluminium sulfate, added that to their antigen, injected it, and produced a massive response. And therein started the use of aluminium salts as adjuvants in vaccination.
So are you saying it could be as simple as the vaccine people needed something toxic to put in the body to create a response?
Well, they probably at the time were simply calling it, they wouldn't be calling it toxicity at the time. They'd simply be saying that you got a enhanced immune response by using the metal or the aluminium salt in combination with the antigen.
The antigen is whatever thing they're putting in there, like the live virus or whatever it is.
Well, the thing about the use of adjuvants and aluminium adjuvants is where you don't use any live entities, viral or bacterial, so you use an inactive or dead or part of it, that's when you need an adjuvant in order to enhance the immune response. And we're probably talking about 80% of all vaccinations are of this type.
Today?
Yeah, today.
So, I see. So if you have a inert kind of a bacteria or virus, it's not a live one, you need something to kick up things in the body.
Yeah, that's the philosophy.
That's what they do. Is there a lot of these adjuvants in vaccines?
Well, an aluminium adjuvant is included. You get about between perhaps 0.5 and about 1 milligram of aluminium in every vaccine. Which may not sound very much, but it's actually quite a lot in terms of that amount of aluminium going into a very small area at the injection site. So it actually produces a very, very high local concentration of aluminium. And that's how it actually works. I mean, you know, the vaccine manufacturers won't tell you this as such, but the reason why aluminium is so effective as an adjuvant is that it does produce local toxicity at the injection site. So that's why when you have a vaccine of some sort, you nearly always produce, as a minimum, you would produce a little red mark at the point. And that's an inflammatory, or evidence of an inflammatory response, an inflammation. And that inflammation is a good part of that. It's due almost entirely to the aluminium adjuvant producing local toxicity.
So that's the little red stuff that moms see. The body's reacting to the aluminum and maybe some of the other adjuvants.
Yeah, I mean, there are very, very few other adjuvants.
Oh, there is.
The vast majority of them are aluminium adjuvants, and there are one or two others.
Oh, I see. And you say they're in 80% of the vaccines.
Yeah, that's right. Well, 80% of all vaccines use an aluminium adjuvant or aluminium adjuvant.
Yeah. And so, and you said that even in maybe a baby of 6 months old, they're getting up to one, how much aluminium?
Well, it can be as much as 1 milligram of aluminium.
1 milligram.
In each vaccination.
Okay.
In each vaccination.
And
so that's a milligram, is a thousandth of a gram. So to us, it sounds a very, very small amount. But when it's a very, very small amount in a very, very small volume, which is the place where you place the adjuvant, then it becomes a high concentration. And that is why it produces, as a minimum, local toxicity.
And what do we know for sure about some other effects of this aluminum in the little baby other than the surface inflammation?
Yeah, we don't actually know very much. I mean, this is not an area of any real active study. It's certainly not an area of study by the vaccine manufacturers and the people who use it.
Of course.
We have our... There has always been evidence that some individuals, whether they be infants or adults, respond in a much worse way to an aluminium adjuvant than others, than in fact the vast majority. So there appear to be individuals who are very sensitive to aluminium adjuvants for some reason. And so the local toxicity that you see simply at the injection site can actually become much more extensive. And there's even evidence, for example, that they may be able to produce brain damage in an infant or something of that sort. So we're talking about very rare events, but these are the sorts of events that we try to understand.
Mm-hmm. And then how does aluminum play in with the whole mercury issue with vaccines?
Well, the mercury was added as a preservative. So the reason people put a mercury in vaccine preparations was to enable the vaccine preparation to be stored for longer, and the mercury prevented microbial growth and other things happening within the vaccine preparation.
Mm-hmm.
But they are added for completely different reasons. Mercury should, if it hasn't been completely replaced, it certainly will be in the very, I think, immediate future. There's no real synergy between these two metals. You know, you do read an awful lot of people talking about synergy between mercury and aluminium. They are completely different in terms of their chemistry and the types of biochemical processes that they can interfere with.
Uh-huh.
You know, mercury is an acutely toxic metal. It should never really been included in any vaccine, and it really shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't be putting it in our teeth either, reference
sure.
to a previous caller.
Sure.
And I think we're sort of learning that pretty quickly now, although it's taken some many, many decades to do so. But the aluminium is slightly different in that you rarely get what's called an acute exposure to aluminium. So you rarely get immediately sick upon exposure to aluminium. And what we're more concerned about is, well, in terms of vaccination, there may be an immediate response, and that's something we're trying to understand. But in terms of just our general exposure, aluminium, we know, is accumulating in our bodies over time. We know it's accumulating in our brains over time. And this is much more of a concern that we are, you know, delaying some sort of response to aluminium exposure to later life.
So I guess a conjecture would be people these days, you know, most people at 50, 60, 70, they got all kinds of stuff going on, right? Health issues. Some of these could possibly be tied into breathing the air and stuff for the last 50 years, maybe. And we don't know. We don't know the connection. Or do we know the connection?
Well, I think, you know, one thing we probably do know is that most of the chronic diseases, human chronic diseases, we don't know the cause of. And these are diseases, the most common that are occurring in the largest groups of the population. And so while for every disease, there will always be some sort of genetic component,
mm-hmm.
the environment is unquestionably playing a significant role in that. And everybody's individual environment will play a significant role in that too.
Yeah.
And of course, we are all genetically dissimilar as well. You know, we may on the surface look like we've all got more or less the same DNA, but we don't in terms of our genetic profiles. And so every individual may respond to a particular toxicant like aluminium in a different way.
Hmm.
And in some individuals, that different way could predispose them to, you know, for example, accumulating more aluminium in their brain tissue and making them more susceptible to diseases like Alzheimer's or something like that.
Yeah. Has there been a connection scientifically with aluminium to Alzheimer's?
Well, yes, the quick answer is yes. And the other quick answer is, I mean, last week I had published a position paper on this exact subject in a journal called Journal of Alzheimer's Disease Reports, where I decided, having spent, you know, getting on for 30 years thinking about this, that I would put my proverbial head on the chopping block and I would say what my opinion is on this very subject. And my opinion now is that without aluminium in the brain, there would be no Alzheimer's disease.
Really?
And not within the normal lifespan of human beings, which I would guess around 100 years.
Uh-huh.
So I honestly believe that the scientific evidence is now sufficient to say that. Now, it's not going to be something that's widely accepted by the Alzheimer's community,
of course,
because
yeah.
they seem to have discarded aluminium as having any role. It's not accepted by the charities who have no interest, it would seem, in having...
They just like to collect
finding
money.
Out actually what causes Alzheimer's.
That's
they
right.
seem to be working in the opposite type direction.
Yeah, right.
And the truth, of course, about aluminium is that this is a little bit like, you know, Pandora's box or whatever. Once the lid is open, that's it. And the problem is that we use aluminium or aluminium in so many ways. It affects all of our lives in so many ways. But suddenly, a government saying, yes, we believe aluminium is involved in Alzheimer's disease, will probably cause stock markets around the world to crash and people to go into some sort of, you know, chaotic type response. So I understand why, to a certain extent, there is a reluctance to accept the science. But there are ways and means of introducing, you know, when science is strong, and it is strong, we really do need to start thinking about ways that we can slowly but surely protect ourselves against aluminium exposure in all different ways without saying we have to stop using it.
Right, right.
You know, stopping using it it would also be a disaster for us. It just couldn't be done. But we can use it safely and effectively, and it's particularly if we try to sort of bring that in progressively without this massive combination of denial and complacency which we have at the moment.
He has a PhD in exotoxicology of aluminum. Dr. Christopher Exley, Professor of Bioinorganic Chemistry at the Birchall Center, Keele University, Staffordshire, England. Honorary Professor at the University of Highland and Islands in Scotland. Biologist. So, let's see. So we humans then are just getting our share of aluminum, just breathing the air, and if we just drink the water without filtering it?
Well, you, as I said, the ways and means that you are exposed to it are myriad. There are so many. Yes, your diet is going to be one of them. But also, yes, there is aluminium in the air. And also, if you work in particular occupations, or you will perhaps have a higher exposure. Your medications, your cosmetics, it goes on and on to a certain degree. I mean, someone contacted me the other day about toners used in printing and in photocopiers and this type of thing are full of aluminium particles. You know, it's just one thing after another that even I, who've been working in the subject for 30 years, I get told about new applications where aluminium is used, you know, almost on a daily basis. So the question here is, we live in what I've written about, the aluminium age. We cannot avoid it completely, and nor should we want to, because in many ways it's been incredibly helpful to us. It has brought about the modern life we have today. But there are actually ways in which, since our governments are not protecting us against this, and in fact you could say they're the opposite, they're completely complacent about it, there are ways and means that individuals can protect themselves to a certain extent. So one of our big areas of research is to show that silicon, the second most abundant element of the Earth's crust, silicon protects against the toxicity of aluminium.
Silicon,
as opposed to silica. But if you drink mineral water, which contains a lot of soluble silicon, this helps to remove aluminium from your body, in your urine, you pee it, and also in your sweat, in your perspiration. So, for example, I drink a silicon-rich mineral water every day because my research, published scientific research, demonstrates that by doing so, you remove aluminium from your body.
What's the name of it?
So you can. Well, there are many, many around the world. There are many silicon-rich mineral waters. The one I know of in the U.S. that you will all have heard of is Fiji water.
Fiji, we heard of that one, right?
Yeah, but you know, we, for example, we have one here. We've done clinical trials using this water for the last 10 years, and we've actually been using a Malaysian mineral water because they provide us the water free of charge. It's called Spritzer, but in the UK now it's available where it's called Acillus. I don't think it's yet available in the US, but there are products. I would suspect there are products in the US that people don't really know about, which are silicon-rich mineral waters. But the importance of the silicon-rich is that when you drink a silicon-rich mineral water, the soluble silicon follows the water into your bloodstream, and in doing so, picks up aluminium and gets rid of it via your kidney and your urine and via your sweat gland and perspiration.
That's pretty cool.
And this is some unique chemistry. There is no other chemistry of silicon and like it is with aluminium. It's something that one of the things that we discovered in my work on fish, when we showed that you protected against the toxicity of aluminium in fish by putting silicon in the system.
How much Fiji water would someone have to drink per day to keep the aluminum out of your brain?
Well, we're talking about actual clinical research.
Yeah, right.
We're talking about a liter a day, liter a day.
Wow, that's a lot.
It's not really.
No,
you
I guess
be, you really you really should be drinking a liter of water a day anyway.
Oh, of course,
anyway.
I see. So you would just, you would just substitute that if you're filtering your water or something.
Yeah, just absolutely. Anytime you would have water to drink, you would use a silicon-rich mineral water instead. Uh-huh. That's right.
Could you add silicon to your present water somehow?
You know, this is the question I get asked more than any other.
I bet you do.
If you go to your health food stores and all places like this, you'll find things called silica supplements.
Silica?
And these are not the same thing. These are literally silica. And silica is sand, like the sand on the beach.
Right, right.
And it doesn't dissolve to give you the soluble silicon that helps to remove aluminium from the body. And actually, one of the things we have been trying to do for about 30 years is to find or to produce a product which we could add to water to produce silicic acid, to produce the soluble form of silicon. We have not been able to do that.
You've not been able to do it.
Now.
Wow.
So that's why we rely on silicon-rich mineral waters, why we rely on something which is purely completely natural coming as a natural product.
Yeah, it's
because there isn't a viable alternative at the moment. There will be, but there isn't at the moment.
It's very curious. There was a doc on our show a couple months ago that mentioned Fiji water to get rid of aluminum. And so we've been questioning that. Is that real or not? So that's very interesting you say that.
Well, he's obviously been reading our research.
So this is
good,
your...
That's good to hear.
Your research is the one that came up with this.
Yes, indeed. That's what we're famous for, yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Christopher Exley, if you have a question, comment, stay right there, Doc. We're going to take a little break. Pretty fascinating, huh? Here's a man right there in the trenches, been looking at aluminum for 30 years or so. You just may have a question about this. One thing we like to do with our water, and you know what I might do, too? I guess, you know, you could do some, just had this idea. We have the water vitalizer, this water structuring device. And you could pour some of the Fiji water right in there with your water too, and help structure that up, because it's probably not structured very well sitting in a plastic bottle. That'd be pretty cool. So you can get yourself a water vitalizer plus from Ken Rolla. You can see the Golden Pyramid. These are really nice machines. I structure all of our water. We distill it, structure it, then put some minerals in there. And the Vitalizer Plus comes with a little mineral cube, which has minerals that are absorbable in the body. Is it inorganic or one of those? I always pick the wrong one. It's one of those. But Ken knows what he's doing. He's a real smart engineer. But he doesn't make this unit anyway. But anyway, this is a Water Vitalizer Plus. They're very cool. And the same place you can get the Scalar Energy with the Tesla technology, to Schumann Wave, to Scalar, to help, shield yourself and reorganize some of these electromagnetic fields so they don't get all cattywampus in your body. And you can look at the Golden Pyramid, click on that, get yourself a Scalar Energy device, the Golden Pyramid or Vitalizer Plus from Ken Rolla, and use promo code ONERADIO for a 10% discount. Stephen Buhner, master herbalist, wrote an entire book on pine pollen. Previously, we asked him, what's the difference between gathering some pine pollen, eating that, and then maybe taking Sir Thrival pine pollen and the grape alcohol, the tincture? What's the difference in the body?
Okay, the difference is pine pollen is probably one of the best nutrient food substances on the earth. And you see, it's made to be uptaken by all of the life around it. All of the other plants take it in and use it for growth. Many of the animals eat it, and it's a very nutrient substance. If you eat it, what happens is it goes through your GI tract and then puts it into the bloodstream, and there's a lot of great stuff in it. I mean, it's really high in amino acids and protein and vitamins, so it's a very magnificent substance. It's kind of a nutrient longevity tonic food, and it will over time raise levels, but if you really want to raise them fast, you don't want to let it go through your GI tract, hence the use of a tincture.
And you can click and order this great product right on our website. Any of these are Thrival links. Take you right to the pine pollen and order away. OneRadioNetwork.com. Previously with Stephanie Seneff, PhD, research scientist with MIT on her work with glyphosates, GMO, and sulfur.
I know you really care about sulfur, and so do I. You know, I really think sulfur is crucial for health, and that we have a massive problem with sulfur deficiency in this country. One of the proteins that I found that is disrupted by glyphosate, because it has an essential glycine, is sulfotransferase. That's a protein that moves sulfate from one molecule to another. But it's really, really important to be able to do that.
And why wouldn't it be able to do it? Because the glyphosate disrupts the natural sulfur cycle in our body?
The cell won't be able to defend itself with sulfate if it can't put the sulfate there. And of course, glyphosate chelates sulfur.
A perfect storm in the challenges department, perhaps, but we're getting creative. So we know that we've been low on sulfur for years because of the chemical fertilizers, and now the GMO thing, which is disrupting the sulfur cycle. And we know with sufficient amounts of sulfur in the body, it's the natural way that the body gets these heavy metals, for example, mercury and mercury sulfate, out of the body, if we have enough sulfur. Click and order Sulfur today on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Know the source on One Radio Network.
To talk to Patrick, call 888-663-6386 or email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Once again, here's Patrick.
There is a pay-per-view DVD thing. I think it's just a few bucks you might want to look at. I think you can get the actual hard copy too. You would just Google that and see if you want to watch it. Injecting Aluminum is the name of the documentary. One of the people that they talked to on the show is our guest. That's how we thought about inviting him on the show. Dr. Christopher Exley knows a lot about aluminum, 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 aluminum.
Patrick, I have to go soon. I don't know whether you can hear me or not.
Oh, I do. I do. How long can you stay?
I've got 5 minutes or so.
Oh, 5 minutes. Wow.
Yeah.
I
didn't know how long this was for.
Oh, so. I thought you knew it was supposed to be an hour. Oh, well, we'll just have to go with the flow here. So I guess we'll go right to...
Some really bad interference here.
Oh, you're getting bad interference now?
Yeah.
Can you hear me now? Okay.
Yep, that's better. Yeah.
Do you know anything about this connection with the glyphosates and the sulfur cycle? And
No,
you don't know. So, what are some of your favorite ways to get rid of this aluminum other than the Fiji water?
That is my favorite.
That's your favorite way.
because it's non-invasive. I mean, what you're talking about is to try to remove something from inside of your body.
Yeah.
You've got to find something which will make a complex with it, and then will enable it to go through your kidney, and generally via the urine is the most effective way of removing something once it's inside the body. So there are drugs, inverted commas, there are drugs that have been used for people with iron overload that will also work for aluminium, but these are things that need to be injected. And so they're perhaps much more relevant where there would be a case of an acute style exposure, but these are extremely rare. So, our philosophy is about essentially prevention, keeping the aluminium or aluminum levels in your body as low as possible for as long as possible.
Here's an email that wants to know, is using aluminum foil touching the food dangerous?
Yeah, I mean, again, one of the things to avoid when you're thinking about aluminum foil is don't cook something in direct contact with it so that the juices from the food can corrode the foil, because that is the way in which you'll get corrosion. But if you're thinking about covering your roast meat of some sort with it, that's perfectly fine. It's really not an issue at all. It's where perhaps you use it as something to cook in, and the juices from the food, and particularly if it's acidic, of course. Anything acidic, tomatoes would be an example, or many fruits that are acidic, you really wouldn't want those to be cooked in contact with anything aluminium, with aluminium foil in particular.
Yeah. Here's a lady that's in Massachusetts. She said she had a test. has very heavy aluminum and other toxic metals. I have a hard time getting rid of these because of my methylation. She's a, you know, the methylation cycle thing that people are looking at. Does doctor have any ideas how I can get rid of this heavy metal aluminum toxicity?
Well, again, you know, my expertise is aluminium or aluminum, so right. I'm not in a position to comment on any heavy metals. You know, we know that drinking a silicon-rich mineral water works. I have, you know, we don't have any shares in Fiji Water or anything like that. I get nothing from this company, but I do want people to protect themselves from having too much aluminium in their body, and that is my recommendation. Some people are a bit. They don't like to have a mineral water from a plastic bottle because they get a bit uptight about possibility of plastics and plasticizers and other things coming from the bottle. You know, in general, this is not the case in general. It's a very tightly and strictly regulated industry. The levels of these things are minuscule at best. You get a lot of worse things to do.
There, yeah.
To be honest, for me, I would rather make sure my body's not full of aluminum.
Linda writes in that I've heard claims that magnesium malate helps pull aluminum out of the brain. I read that malic acid increases urinary excretion of aluminum. Do you know if that's true?
Yeah, I've heard similar things. There's never been any research in that area to prove that that is the case. So this is not scientific, but I will add a but. Magnesium, there is a good case that magnesium will be helpful against aluminium toxicity because actually aluminium often exerts its toxicity by replacing magnesium.
Ah.
So having something which is rich in magnesium is probably a good idea. The malic acid bit, you know, this is more to do with the known response of plants that exude malic acid are able to grow in areas rich in aluminium, but it's a completely different mechanism. There's nothing that has any relevance to human beings.
And there are people that suggest that Epsom salts help get rid of aluminium. It's possible. It's a magnesium and sulfur, maybe. You know, maybe it does.
Yeah, I'm not sure about getting rid of, but in terms of perhaps helping where you've got a possibility of aluminium toxicity, then something rich in magnesium could help.
Finally, do you know coal-fired plants, I guess, Doc, are some of the, it's used more widely than any means of producing energy, right? Coal-fired plants. And aluminum's in there, correct? In the pollution?
I would say that it's not the amount of aluminium that's in air is not as great as you might imagine, actually. I mean, other than in the most polluted areas, you can, in some of the most polluted cities of the world, you see some of these images of the cities in China.
Sure.
I would imagine there that some of the particulates will have aluminium in them. But in general, I don't think people should worry too much about that.
So then mainly it's getting into the food and the stuff we put on our cosmetics and things like this.
Yeah, everyday life. Yeah, really, to be absolutely frank with you.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Axley, thanks.
Processed foods.
How does aluminum get into processed foods? What do they do with that?
Because it's used in processed foods.
Oh, good.
As part of the processing.
Great. Probably not on the label either, right?
It's definitely not on the label, but sometimes it's an E number, if you have E numbers over there in the US.
I don't think we do. Are there different ingredients that are used in products that are kind of masquerading as aluminum that we could look for?
Again, it should, in theory, if it's used, it should be there.
It's supposed to be on the label, yeah.
And sometimes they're labeled, for example, as a type of starch, which has aluminium in there and a number of other things.
Oh,
but, yeah, there are a vast array of them. Oh. And some of them, I say, here in Europe and the United Kingdom are called E numbers. And for example, you've got sodium aluminum phosphate is used, SALP, which is used as a raising agent. You get it a lot in the U.S. in a lot of your cake mixes.
Oh, and baking powder, things like that. Yeah,
that sort of stuff.
But you can actually get aluminum-free baking powder here now, too.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah, aluminum-free baking powder, yeah.
Yeah. That's good news. But that's what we want to see, more and more alternatives. If we can't just ban everything, but we can offer alternatives, and that's what we should be doing.
Uh-huh. Do you have any theories on why some people get Alzheimer's and some don't? Do you think it's more exposure to aluminum?
There are instances where both environmental and occupational exposure has resulted in Alzheimer's disease in younger people.
Mm-hmm.
But there do seem to be some very specific, probably genetic differences, which are predisposing people to Alzheimer's disease because it's also predisposing them to accumulate aluminium in their brain. And that's an area that we would very much like to do research on in the future.
Plus the genetic dispositions of people have trouble detoxing things like the methylators, the poor methylators, so they have to take extra caution as well to get rid of this stuff. Well, Dr. Exley, thanks. I'm glad you were able to stay this long. Thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure.
Okay.
Take care.
Dr.
Thank
Christopher
you.
Exley, always fun to talk to these guys that have really been in the trenches on these kind of things, huh? Wow, man, exotoxicology aluminum PhD in England, Christopher Exley. That might be a fun thing to watch. I don't know about fun, but interesting. Injecting Aluminum is the name of the DVD. We thought he was going to be able to be on an hour, and obviously the person didn't tell him, but that's okay. We got a lot of good stuff. Thanks a lot for being here. I might as well just kind of go and say goodbye, and we'll see you, Andrew Goss, tomorrow. Thanks for Lynn for taking notes. Thank you for your ongoing support of One Radio Network. See you in the morning with Andrew.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is One Radio Network.com.